For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
What is happening, everybody? Welcome back to another I almost said debate night. Wow, I'm completely brain dead over here. This is gonna be a good show. Another edition of Tour Life. Sorry, we are in Norway right now. Yuli is maybe 10 miles away from me at the host hotel, I believe. Right?
Yes.
And we are in a Airbnb down in a little village where I think 200 people, I believe, is the population of the village I'm in currently. There's
massive.
There's a little grocery store. There's one gas station. And there's a horse track across from where we are right now. So if you live in Norway, you probably know where exactly we're staying. I just completely told you exactly where we are. But the weather here, how would you describe the weather so far, Yuli?
Seems like Seattle weather. It's like nice, and then all of a sudden it's just like sprinkling, and then it's downpouring, and then it's nice, and then it's like the temperature is nice, really good, perfect, kind of all the way across.
I don't think meteorologists exist here. Like, I don't think someone is a meteorologist in this area, because you just say it's going to rain every hour, and then
why is it called a meteorologist? Wouldn't those guys like be like inspecting meteors?
Okay, let's not dive too much into that. Again, my brain is kind of mush with the travel and the time difference, and we're going to sleep at 5 o'clock in the morning and waking up at 2 in the afternoon. It's been a weird last couple days. But yes, the weather's been kind of wild back and forth a little bit. The tournament, though, does look like it's going to be decent weather, and we'll dive a little bit more into the PCS Open, which is why we're here in Norway. But we have a lot of stories that we need to jump into. We got to talk about, is the FPO not going to be happening in the future on the Disc Golf Pro Tour? We got to talk about what happened at the Kansas City Wide Open. We've got Paul McBeth winning again over on the European Tour. We've got an interesting tweet from Greg Barsby. We've got a really kind of, I almost would say disturbing might be the perfect adjective of a PDGA kind of scandal, if you will, that went down. Not sure if you saw that. A big announcement from the PDGA about Worlds, and then a few other little topics real quick, and then we'll wrap it up. And then go to bed and play some disc golf tomorrow as best as we can. Me and Ezra were talking about this earlier. This might be the most unprepared I've ever felt going into a tournament. If you watch our practice round, which we actually just posted today, my back's killing me. Ezra's ankle's jacked up. We're not being able to throw like real shots in practice. And the weather's been kind of iffy. We had two of our practices, Yuli. We finished after like midnight. We today was the first day I was able to see some holes in like actual light. I was like, oh, that's what the fairway looks like. So we'll see. But let's jump into the biggest story. And I think really something that a lot of speculation was coming out because we didn't have all the information, but this was the Kat Merch post on Instagram talking about, I'll just read it here. She said, I will not be going to Europe this year. Sadly, I was looking forward to competing overseas, but unfortunately I'm caught in a vicious cycle of my body biting, fighting off E. coli, which is wild. I probably shouldn't have played the preserve, but given the circumstances of the situation and the potential cutting the FPO field for the 2024, push me on forward. And then it kind of continues there. But it was interesting that that was kind of just thrown into the post. It wasn't something at this point. I don't think a lot of people had heard I don't think anyone had really talked about it outside of like their group. Because I had heard some rumors leading up to their press conference last week about the FPO field might not happen next year because of these litigations that are going on and the amount of money that the FPO field is losing for all this. But that was the first of like, what'd she just say? And I think some people took that to mean all of FPO in 2024. And then some other people were like, no, she was just talking about preserve. Like preserve might not happen for FPO. I think we just lost Yuli. We're going to keep going though. Our internets aren't the greatest, guys. So it is doing the best. That's why, I probably also should tell you we're not live, obviously. So if you're listening to this after the fact, this is not live. Okay. So that was the first of it. Then there was a Vanessa Van Dyken post that was shared. And I was not even aware that this group on Facebook even existed. It's the DGPT FPO players group on Facebook. And it's a screenshot that talks about the press conference happening at 3:30 to stand up for female sports. And then she goes on to say, I was informed last night that the Disc Golf Pro Tour has exhausted its funds, and this will be the last battle they are able to fight in the courts. They will do whatever necessary moving forward to help keep us on tour. But if the lawsuits continue, they are in a financial place that would lead to cutting the FPO division. And then kind of continues to go on about information about the press conference. So there was these two posts, and I think there might've been one or two other posts that got shared or some FPO players were talking about. So clearly some information was being sent out from someone on the Disc Golf Pro Tour or someone that might have heard something from the Disc Golf Pro Tour to these FPO players that then they brought to light what's going on. Now, Steve Dodge since then has gone on the Nick and Matt show and stated basically that the FPO division isn't going anywhere. So he kind of just squashed all these rumors or speculations or theories and was like, FPO is not changing. Nothing's happening to it. I don't think there's been an official statement from the Disc Golf Pro Tour at this point, but that's where we stand. And, you know, I think some people have kind of just been like, all right, whatever, move on. And I think some people are still kind of being like, wait a second, what is going on?
I mean, that's just absolutely think about to think that you could, they would actually cut the whole deal. But when you think about like how much money they're spending for the legal fees and everything and to keep them on tour and battle that, you got to think about all the states that we're in where those, like, I guess laws would defend Natalie to be able to have those lawsuits, period. Cause I think that's what it's about, is there's certain states that she's going to just do it every single time, which is, I think there's a few left too. Illinois,
Massachusetts,
Vermont, Massachusetts. Yeah. And so I think they're just looking into the future and being like, hey, man, we're not going to be able to do this.
Yeah.
So they definitely have a decision to make, because if they're saying they can't afford it now, and this is the last one, we still have like a bunch of more tournaments in those states.
And that's what I said on debate night earlier this week, is I think the initial move by the Disc Golf Pro Tour will not be to completely cut out the FPO division from their, tournaments. But I think the first move would be to strategically set up tournaments for the season that aren't going to be in states that they feel like they can not enforce their policy that they are trying to enforce and trying to protect the FPO division. So we'll see kind of if any information comes from that, but that I just wanted to kind of clear that up. That as of right now, Steve Dodge has come out and said that he's talked to the people that would know and said that the FPO division is fine moving forward. So it's safe, if you will. All right, Kansas City wide open. I took the week off. I was able to go back to Vegas to hang out with the wife in the new place in Vegas. You ended up going down to Kansas City for the Kansas City wide open, which was played on a course that leading into it, there was a lot of hype, I would say, that I saw on my end from people in my mentions and people in my DMs talking about like how this course is legit. This is awesome. Just wait until you see this course. Did the hype live up to you, Yuli? Do you think it was one of the better courses we played this season?
You know, the course was pretty sweet. It was. I think they need a little, I don't know, it was missing something. I think it was tough enough for sure for everybody. It scored really well for the most part, but I don't know if it was too easy. I think some of the pars were off maybe. Like they had like a 630 foot par five that was like, you could throw it to within 100 feet if you threw it really good. That was kind of bizarre. Good holes, some new holes. I think they need to clean up a couple like things that are like on the ground from it being so new. I think new placements. But Kansas City was awesome. I mean, a big crowd, lots of tickets were sold, I believe. The field wasn't very big, so that took away from it a little bit, I think, because there was only a handful of touring pros there, probably.
Mm-hmm.
And the weather was great. I think that the Elite Series needs to go through Kansas City without a doubt, and I think with a couple tweaks to the course, I think it could definitely be it. But like our second hole was like a hole one's great. Our second hole though was like a 200 foot island hole.
Yeah.
That was like, you could almost jump putt it. It wasn't that tough. I was surprised with that because they have room to push it back a little bit,
mm-hmm.
or even make it a smaller island to where the island was absolutely massive. but then it had some like of the best holes that we played, I feel like on tour, there's a couple really, really good ones.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really close to being Elite Series status, but it definitely felt like a Silver Series. I'll say that.
Yeah. And a lot of that might have to do with the field. Like you had mentioned, this was the worst strength of field by quite a bit for the season this year. And, you know, going down the leaderboard a little bit here, Gannon Burr ends up taking it down on the MPO side. This is Gannon Burr's now fourth win of the season. He also won the Open at Austin, the Blue Ridge Championship, and DMC not that long ago. And looking at the leaderboard, though, Yuli, to me, this kind of feels like what the Disc Golf Pro Tour wants the silver events to look like, I would say. Again, I don't know, by them elevating how many points they were this year compared to years past, I think that made a lot more people play and more of them. This one obviously was really badly attended, mainly because one, I think it was a little bit of a drive from where we were at Preserve. And then obviously the other one being a lot of people are coming over to Europe and going there and playing and then coming over to Europe was going to be pretty tough for a lot of people. But looking at this leaderboard, to me, this is kind of what a silver event, besides I would say Gannon Burr being there, you don't really have any of the top 10 guys, top 20 guys really that are on tour right now. And so it definitely allowed for some new names to kind of jump up the leaderboard, which we'll jump into here in a little bit. But I thought it was an interesting, definitely an interesting field for the MPO side and the FPO side. And a take that I had, which it sounds like you might agree with me, I think we got to get out of Emporia, and I think we got to be in Kansas City. To me,
and that was gonna. No, that was going to be my take for the whole event. I'm talking about it as if, because I know Kansas City wants an Elite Series, so I'm talking about this event compared to an Elite, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about it as the event as I played it, which was a very well-run Silver Series. Like, mm-hmm. don't take anything away from that. That's exactly what it was, and it lived up to all my expectations as far as it being a Silver Series. Now, compared to... Elite Series, it's missing something. It might be the field, but it also, I think, needs to get a little bit harder. 18 was really soft for finishing hole. It was really soft. It was almost like a guaranteed birdie if you wanted it to be.
Mm-hmm.
But the attendance, like, Kansas City is a great disc golf city. It is a great disc golf city. Comparing it to Emporia's course is better for sure for an Elite Series, but it's not even close in comparison to the feel of the crowd and everything that Kansas City brought at this Silver Series. Like, it's not even close. I don't know what Emporia can do to get Kansas City to come over there and support, but there's gotta be some course in Kansas City to be able to take it away from Emporia. There's gotta be, you know,
Do you think they can tweak this one enough to your liking to be an Elite event? Do they have the land to be able to do it?
I think so. I mean, like I said, most of the holes that I was like, you could push back and make it a bit tougher. You could, but it's a really tight hole, a really tight course as well. There's a lot of little like scrambly, I don't know. I don't like scrambly holes for the Elite Series. You know what I mean? Like 280 feet, then sideways 280 feet, and there's a bunch of little trees in the way, and then there's like, you know, rocks in different places and like stumps and stuff. So your lies aren't as crisp as the other same shot. Like little things like that. Those like I look at, and I'm like, think about Emporia. You're getting a lie, and it's, you know, and like Des Moines, you get a lie, it's probably going to be pretty good wherever you throw type deal.
Mm-hmm.
I think they can move back. I don't know. I want to see it in Kansas City. I'm not trying to take anything away from Emporia, but seeing the attendance that they had, I think they know they have to, something has to change. So why not just combine the two and then sponsors the Kansas City Wide Open, make it the biggest event that they can, find a course that can fit everybody, or make venue doable. I think you have a winner.
Yeah, there definitely needs to be some sort of a change, because this year's attendance at the DDO was obviously not very good, if you will. All right, so kind of busting down the leaderboard, like we mentioned, Gannon Burr took it down. He led the field in strokes gained putting as well. As finishing third in strokes game tee to green. Looking down, you had Joseph Anderson, kind of a new name, someone that isn't really a touring pro. I haven't really seen him at any other events this year, or at least on any sort of leaderboards this year. But he came out the gates shooting a low round of the day, 13 under. Joseph Anderson took off with a really great first round, shooting that 13 under, and then honestly was able to kind of maintain it. Didn't have the greatest second round, but was still able to shoot a good third round to finish second place. And I think a lot of people probably thought he was going to maybe slip down the leaderboard after coming out shooting so well, but he was able to kind of push and really was one of the few people actually pushing Gannon there towards the end of the round. So very impressive tournament from Joseph Anderson. You have Jake Hemenheimer, who has actually switched from his horseshoe putt. That's probably how that name probably rings a bell for you, is he was doing those horseshoe putts for a while. He has switched from that to a more traditional style putting, and it seems to be working out for him. He finished in third. And then to round up out your top five, you have Sullivan Tipton and Kevin Kiefer, also with Emerson Keefe and Robert Burridge. Good finishes by them, tying for sixth. You also had Matty O, kind of one of the top players that maybe was a little bit forgotten in this tournament. He didn't start off the round that great. He started off 10 shots behind Joseph Anderson after round one, but was able to kind of battle back to finish in a top 10 position, tied with Nick Newton and Evan Scott. And yeah, it was just, I would say it was just a pretty good, interesting, fun tournament to just see new faces kind of on coverage that you don't normally get to see throw a lot of shots. And it was good for that, I would say. One thing that jumped out, I would say that was like a storyline from the tournament, was how the TDs ended up adding a mandatory middle of the tournament. Gannon Burr kind of threw a shot that they were never even expecting. Yuli, you were actually on the card at the time when it was happening. And the TDs discussed with the PDGA, with it being a safety issue, and decided that it would be best to actually put a mandatory there to force people to go down the tunnel of the hole the way it was designed. Now, I think I'm okay with them changing that, because it's going to be tough, I would say, especially at a new course, to know what people are going to do. You would think that they would have pros and stuff go through it so they can kind of get an idea. But when you have this many people that can throw all these different shots, they're going to find different lines and stuff to be able to kind of make their way to the hole easiest possible. So I don't mind them changing it mid tournament. Yuli, what are your thoughts on that? Were you kind of upset to see that, or did you not care?
I think I am. I mean, I was with Gannon, and him and I were looking at that line together. Actually, we were checking it out, and I'm like, I'm pretty sure it's all good over there. We looked at the caddy book. He ended up taking the line. I did not. I went down the middle, because it's a really short shot. You just have to hit a gap or whatever, and you're guaranteed birdie. I don't like them changing. They said that it was a hazard for like other people on the course, which it could be, because Gannon threw a shot that like ended up landing on a different green. But the way that he threw it, another shot, I don't think he's coming near that green.
Mm.
He was out of bounds too. And so I felt like that was an excuse personally for them to put up the mando. Like, it was a complete excuse of being like, hey, this is going over to this shot. But the hole actually has out of bounds, and that's going to keep people from throwing to the green. It's not like, you know what I'm saying? I don't think it really was a risk. If anything, the risk would be speed of play, because you're throwing it into big, tall shrubs. And Gannon told the crowd, like, hey, I'm going this way. You guys want to spot my disc? So there was like a bunch of people that were able to find it. Otherwise, I think it would have been tough to actually find his shot. But I think that's it's hard for me to think that you can build a course, have the course, have the tournament, and then just throw up a mando when a player figures out a cool way to play the hole and make it easier for himself and beat the field that day. You know what I mean? Because if his disc literally lands like 4 feet short, he's taking a 250 foot approach into the green for eagle. And he deserves that, because he outsmarted the TD, you know, or not the TD, but the course designer. And that's what to me, I just really, this happened to me actually in Kansas City once. They put up mandatory, I think it was at Blue Valley maybe. And there was like a mandatory, like 150 feet in front of you. And it was a big dog leg par five. And I remember taking a giant Anheuser with a rock back. It was that long ago, a rock. And I got like an easy eagle to where people were having a tough time getting fives. And the course designer and the TD were mad at me because other people started doing it again. And that to me is like, listen, I found a way to beat this hole, you know? Because it's our job to be shot makers. And if you don't design it well enough to keep whoever's throwing that shot from doing it, that's on you. And you got to play the tournament, and the next tournament, then you put up the mandatory. You know what I mean?
No,
now, as far as safety hazard, I see that, but I was there and I saw the shot. and it went to the green. It did. But I feel like there's OB that's kind of guarding that. Nobody's going to throw it over there on purpose to that green. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's an errant shot that went to there. That's what I want to kind of get across. He threw a bad shot that ended up on a green. He didn't peer it all the way into a big crowd of people that are wrapped up on the hole, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it was interesting the wording or the words that I believe it was the Disc Golf Pro Tour. Either it was them or the PDGA that made a statement about them adding a mandatory. It was interesting because they did say that his disc almost hit someone on the green, and then Gannon quickly, reshared that Instagram post or whatever it was, and was like, "Just want to let you know, it didn't get close to hitting anyone on the green." And you might be right; they might have been using that kind of like, "Oh, it almost hurt someone, so we need to change it." And
That's exactly. It didn't almost hit anybody. Like there's actually an angle of them catching it. I think they showed it on the live of it coming in.
And there's no one on the green.
Near anybody.
No. There's no one in frame. So
potentially, yes, if somebody's over there on that green, potentially it could hit them. But that's also an out of bounds line. So it's not like we're just throwing shots to the green, you know what I mean? Or taking it like way over that green to Annie back. That was he threw that thing so high with so much Anheuser that it covered and went left. You know what I mean? Like, so in my opinion, that green is not in play.
It did bring up something interesting too. I think this was something that Simon might have mentioned back when he was talking about all the changes and stuff that he might want to see. Adding mandos throughout the tournament could make certain holes a little bit more exciting and change up lines that players have to play, which would also make holes more challenging as well, where we're not stepping up to a hole that we've thrown the same shot the two previous days and just be like, all right, well, we just got to throw the same exact shot for this hole. We're stepping up and be like, okay, yesterday it was a backhand hyzer. Today it's a flex forehand line. And I think that could be very interesting for, the fans, and also challenging for the players, and something that maybe the Disc Golf Pro Tour should look into, because we've always talked about changing pin locations, changing tee locations to kind of make holes different. This would be a really easy one for them just to put in the caddy book. On Friday, the mandatory is going to be right of this tree. On Saturday, the mando is going to be left of this tree. On Sunday, it's going to be a double mando, and you got to throw it between these two, right? It would not be very difficult for them to add that so players can practice and know what's coming ahead of time. And especially on some holes, I think it could work really well. So we'll see maybe if that could be the future of some course design stuff.
I 100% think that should be something that they implement for sure. One of the things that I'm seeing a lot of is people just, there's a tunnel shot and people just take, 600 feet straight right and crash into the trees. That's the same thing that I'm talking about right now. Like, the course designer hates that. He's like, no, I made this beautiful hole right down the middle. I want you guys taking that mid range and taking it or fairway driver or whatever. And then, everybody's throwing so far. I also think that the grenade's becoming more and more predominant on tour, to where people are completely, I would say, breaking holes, but they're figuring out ways to get easier birdies. And so not only mandos to make you go left or right, but I think eventually we're going to see a lot more mandos to where you have to go down, like maybe a height mando or something. That's what I would like to see as far as a course design standpoint, because it's really tough right now to have a course. Like, we play a lot of traditional golf course on a lot of traditional golf courses. So it's hard to make those tunnel shots, with trees that are high enough for these people to be like, well, there's a 10-foot gap there, I'm taking it. Listen, if there's a 3-foot gap to the right and it's 20 feet off the tee, that's a pretty easy gap for the top pros to hit, right? Like, even if it's only 3 feet, at 20 feet in front of you, a lot of people are probably going to try to take that. And I don't think right now course designers are looking at those small things. And then after a few people throw it, they're hitting limbs down and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And then all of a sudden, you know, nobody's going right down the middle. So I feel like that should be something that course designers kind of take into account and make those adjustments.
Yeah. And I think they need to look at the risk reward, right? If the risk of taking that shot is so small to where someone's like, well, if I do mess it up, I'm still going to be so far down there, I can just kind of pitch up and get up and down. Yeah. That's way better than me trying to get through the gap. And then I miss the gap or I hit a tree. And now all of a sudden I'm really screwed and I'm really struggling to save my par. So I think that's the big one. If the risk is there of where you're throwing over OB the whole time, and if it doesn't come back in, you re-tee, then I sometimes like having those gaps because it, you know, it makes it a little bit more exciting for people. Can they pull it off or can't they? But it's when it's like, there's no risk involved, to me, it's just not exciting. All right. FPO side, a little bit of a hometown hero, if you will. Allie Smith was mentioned on this podcast before. And I think we stated that she was like young, I want to say. I think I might have made the mistake saying that she was like 16 or 18. And she ends up DMing me on Instagram, like stating like, no, I can't remember exactly how old she is, but she's certainly not 16 years old or 18 or however young that we initially said. So first off, big apologies for making that mistake to Allie. But she wins this weekend on her home course. She led the field in strokes gained putting, third in strokes gained tee to green. She was also the 2021 AM World Champ. So she's only been pro for 2 years now. An interesting stat from Stat Mando on her win here. Her first 8 events on tour, 0 top 20s. Her last 12 events, she's finished top 20 in every single event. So she's kind of been on this upward incline a little bit, if you will. And I thought the coolest thing that she said in her post round or her speech, whatever you want to say, when they, you know, put the microphone right after she taps out and asks her questions, she said, "I quit teaching to try to be a disc golfer, and this makes me feel like I made the right decision." So there you go. I think a lot of people maybe have those question marks. Those questions pop up while they're out on tour sometimes of like, should I even be doing this anymore? Am I ever going to be good enough? And, you know, it's always nice to sometimes see people kind of persevere and push through. And it was cool to see her get that win. And I didn't even know that was like her home course. So she had tons of friends and family there cheering her on and taking it down. So Allie Smith is someone maybe to keep an eye out on moving forward. That's really, did you have anything else from the FPO side?
No, I mean, I watched a lot of the coverage, when I woke up in the morning, and it seemed like a pretty tight battle the whole time. I was thinking that, Allie might've been pushed a little at the end from Holland or somebody. Mm-hmm. And eventually she did. I mean, Holland came in with a pretty dang good final round. So it was fun to see Allie actually hold her off and finish the job, especially first time winner. That was awesome.
Yeah, it was a little scary there on 18. Her upshot stayed in bounds just by a few feet. But yeah, Holland and Lisa Fakus, I think, were the ones that were really kind of pushing her down the stretch. Lisa ended up taking kind of a big number on 18 that kind of got her out of it. But yeah, I believe at the time Holland ended up missing the putt that would have mattered. But I believe, you know, going down to it, Holland, you know, made Allie think that she had a birdie the last hole to win it. So that was exciting towards the end. Really weird. I don't know if you saw the live or if anyone did watch the live. It was a really weird commentary wise. I'm not going to get, you know, it's a silver event, so I'm not going to get too much in the production side and the commentary on these things. But the commentary was very strange because that Holland was putting for birdie before Allie's putt. And had Holland made that putt, Allie would have had to make her putt to tie or to win, excuse me, to win. So like Holland's birdie putt was the tournament. Like that was the big moment. and there was no lead up. There was no talking. It just all of a sudden is like cuts to Holland. She misses the putt and you're just like, oh, the turn. Okay. The tournament's over. Like, I think they missed the ball there. And that's one thing the Pro Tour definitely needs to work on is creating these storylines throughout the tournament and building them up and then letting them play out. And that one just, it was such a weird, it was after watching a bunch of US, I watched a bunch of the women's US Open out at Pebble Beach. And it was just a really fascinating tournament. And then just the stark difference in between that and this, like we still have a lot, we still have a lot to go on the production and commentary side. But like, that was one thing where it's just like, if you're going to get one thing right all weekend, it should be building up the drama to the final putt that matters. And they just missed the ball there. So,
I was watching actually on the European side too. And they had obviously, Paul had won the tournament, but then they were talking about how, I forgot, one of the players had a putt to tie to USDG get solo team. Second. They said,
or there's
well,
no, a
USDG... saying that it was to get solo second.
Okay.
And it was actually a putt to tie. He had to make the putt to tie Proctor. But they were saying it was for solo. So a small mistake, but I remember thinking like, I feel like those are the ones that you got to kind of get right, you know?
Yeah. At the end, you definitely want to try to be on your A game for sure. You definitely don't want to be kind of slipping up there on hole 18 when all the drama and stuff has been built up. But again, you know, I don't think we have professional commentators or broadcasters just yet. We're not there. And so, you know, I'm sure the people that are in the booth are doing the best that they can. All right, moving to the PCS Open preview. We talked a little bit about it already, but we'll throw up some photos here for people watching on the YouTubes, and I'll explain it if you're listening to us. So the PDGA Euro Tour is has been teaming up with the Disc Golf Pro Tour all season long. This, I don't know what number this is, 7 or 6 or something. But this is the big one because it's the one right before the European Open. So you're going to have the most Americans at this one versus all the previous kind of Disc Golf Pro Tour, Euro Tour collabs, if you will. This is a Disc Golf Pro Tour Elite event as well. And the times, if you're wanting to tune in, it will be Thursday through Saturday this week. So we play starting tomorrow. We finish on Saturday. Times will be very early for FPO. So if you are loving that FPO, you have to wake up at 3:30 in the morning on the East Coast to watch it. And MPO will start right around breakfast at 9:30 in the morning on East Coast time. So you can tune in. We got some good feature cards this week for you. We got Calvin Heimberg, Greg Barsby, Eagle McMahon coming back from his injury. We haven't seen him in a little bit. And then Paul McBeth makes his kind of debut. He's been over here, so it's really us kind of joining with him, but he hasn't played with the full caliber, if you will, of the American players. So this will be the first time we kind of can see him with everyone as well. So that will be the Jomez live card. And then the other live card, which will be post-produced by MDG Media, will have, I believe, Thomas Heinonen, I believe, Jakob Semerad, Ricky Wysocki, and Anthony Barella. So two really good cards on the MPO side. And then for FPO, you have Tatar, Weiss, Stein, and Salonen. And then Chris, Katrina Allen, Missy Gannon, Hannah Blomroos, and Lorentzen. So a good, really solid field. We also haven't seen Hina and Evelina in a while. They had passport issues, so they were going to plan on playing a bunch of tournaments in the States. They weren't able to get to the States, so they're going to be back in the mix. And it should be a good one, man. It should be a good one. This course, what are your thoughts on this course, Yuli?
I played it once. I played it once today, and I think it's a little bit new. It has some of those holes to where if you land it, like there's a lot of like bumps and stuff, I feel like, in the fairways, like on a few of the holes.
Well, it's cows. We were told cows are just kind of roam around those fields a lot. And so that's why the ground is just terrible. And again, if you haven't watched our practice round, Ezra is suffering a little bit of an ankle injury right now. And this might be the worst terrain to walk on with an ankle injury. It is. Yeah.
That's my only thing. But honestly, it feels like kind of like it reminds me of Washington. Lot of the par 3s remind me of that, like straight, you know, there's a lot of 330s. There's a lot of like 380 mm-hmm. like straight shots. And then the par 4s are really good. There's a couple really great par 4s. There's zero par 5s, a couple unique holes, you know, with the Viking boat and then the tractor on the mm-hmm. last hole. So it definitely has some, and then, oh my gosh, the scenery is just like, who cares what the course is like at some point? Cause you can just look up and see the best views that you'll see on tour, period. But I'm pretty sure I like it. I like to make my decision after I play the tournament to see how it flows, to see how it goes. But right now I really do like it. I was going to say with the featured card, you said Eagle first tournament, but he actually played the Preserve and he's coming off that second.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
Third place. My apologies. So he's
you're right. He took a break before the Preserve.
Yeah.
You're right. That's my fault.
Yep. And then the one thing that I saw is the Paige isn't on the featured card anymore. So she's actually slipped and I believe she broke her leg on the bridge, on one of the bridges to go across to a hole. That's what I heard today.
Wait, what?
She snapped. Yeah, I heard she broke her leg. Like, not a tiny thing. I don't think anybody's said anything, but that was the rumor going around the course today that she actually slipped and broke her leg.
Oh my! Oh well, if that is the case, so we are definitely
prayers go out to her for sure, because it's not. Man, I know for a fact it's not a small injury, and I'm pretty sure it might have been her fibula.
I mean, those bridges, some of those bridges were, I mean, there was one that we walked over and I was like, Ezra, careful, man. Cause I stepped on it and kind of my foot kind of slipped out a little bit. I was like, whoa. But geez, that is terrible news. That's so bad. I mean, yeah. I know everyone was myself included. Everyone was very looking forward to kind of the Kristen Tatar, Paige Pierce potential battle that we might see at the European Open this year. Yeah. And I mean, if the rumors are that she broke her leg, that's not something that it's like, oh, well, maybe it's not that bad and she'll be able to play next week. Like if that's what people think happened, it's, you know, whether it's actually broken or not, it's not something that probably is going to be.
No, I'm pretty sure it's broken. Like she broke her leg. Somebody on the course today when I was playing came up and was talking about it. Like, hey, did you hear about this? And I'm like, heard she got hurt, you know, but then they were like, no, they had to like reset it. And it's a bad
thing. She hasn't posted anything on Instagram. So I guess we'll all be on kind of the lookout to see, what her post is, but man, hopefully it's not as bad as, maybe we think it might be. And she heals up quickly. So, geez, that's wild. You know what? I when I was looking at the feature card, I was like, I was curious. I was like, why is Paige not on here? And there you go. So, man, oh gosh.
Yeah. So definitely throw good vibes her way and stuff. That leg injuries and any sort of injury like that, they're tough to come back from. Takes a lot of work, and she's gonna have to put in a lot of work to get that back over. Sounds like a long period of time. So.
Yeah, head over to her Instagram, guys, and drop some nice, kind words there. I'm sure like please. That will definitely help. All right, so well, breaking news, I guess to another story here. This is I believe I've seen him on some of the European Tour coverage actually. So he's actually a pretty solid player over here in Europe. This was something that was sent to me in my DMs on Instagram, and a few people tweeted it to me. I think he actually might have even shared it himself to me as well as a story that he wants to kind of put out there. And maybe we need to reach out to maybe have him come on next week to maybe talk about it a little bit. But this is, I'm going to butcher his name, but his last name is Yarnes. And he makes a post saying, yes, I'm not playing this week. It was supposed to be a quiet protest from my side, but after getting so many questions, I feel I should give an explanation. As many of you know, I have been part of the local organizing committee behind the Sula Open in 2022. We joined forces with the crew at Oveross, which is where we're playing currently, for the first Disc Golf Pro Tour event outside the U.S. This event was a huge success, and both we and the Disc Golf Pro Tour wanted a repeat in 2023. Hold on one second. I need to pull it up because it actually didn't take his entire post. Okay. After meeting in autumn 2022, it was made crystal clear for us that the crew at Oveross do not want to cooperate with us anymore, even though this is what the Disc Golf Pro Tour wanted. My local club, Lagvag IL, was the first disc golf club to be established in our part of Norway. Since we have always been the most experienced club in our area, we have always been striving towards helping up and coming clubs, courses, and tournaments. This is especially true for the club at Oveross. The selfish way the crew at Oveross chose to end their cooperation with us was not nice and a huge step back for disc golf in our local area. The feeling I'm left with is that the project I cherish and have worked to improve for over 10 years has been taken away from me. So initially when I was sent this, I was like, I don't know if I really want to kind of bring this up. Like, I don't, it just kind of, but it got a lot more traction and a lot more people were sending it to me. And this seems like it's kind of what it sounds like is, last year, two courses were played. This year, we're just playing at the one course. And again, maybe we need to have this guy on to kind of explain a little going on, but it sounds like they just kind of got cut out of doing anything with this. And I could see how like feelings got hurt for sure, especially if you know, were involved with kind of putting this tournament on for so many years. And as soon as it now has like, that Disc Golf Pro Tour behind it, you've got all the players coming to it and you're like, yes, all my hard work has like finally paid off, to get kind of shut out. I can definitely see, you know, getting a little upset with that, but I wanted to just bring that to light a little bit because, you know, I don't know, maybe there's another side of the story. Maybe something's going on and maybe it's not that big of a deal, but I don't know. Do you have anything to add to that, Yuli?
No, I heard the same thing, and I heard it was just like they had to make a tough decision, and one of the courses had to go. I heard that part of the big decision, I don't know if this is factual or what, or maybe it was whoever was telling me, just kind of said a one-sided thing, but I heard that there had been one course. Like they didn't want to have two courses to go between, which makes sense to me. That's like something that they really push for in every city that we go to, is the one course, so they don't have to move equipment and all of that stuff. Which is that if that's the case, then I could see, you know, you got to pick one and this is the one that they picked and then the other one's out. That would not sit well with me if I was working at the other course for a long time and growing, you know, the disc golf in this country. But without the information, you know, at hand, that would be my only thing, is that would make logic, or that would be logical for me, is they had to choose one and they chose this one.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, if either side has more information that we're maybe not telling the full story and they want to give us a little more intel, just, you know, reach out to myself on Twitter or Instagram and we can kind of make sure that we button that up next week. But all right. Paul McBeth wins the Skella. I'm going to butcher this. Oh, go ahead.
I will say this. Figure out how to make it right. You know, it's never good to have division in especially with big events like this. And we have all the Americans coming to Norway to play an awesome event. And then to have that kind of division, like, figure out how to come together and make it right so that everybody's involved. Cause it does suck to not have one of their best players playing against, you know, the best field that they've ever seen.
And I always said this in Ultimate too, like Ultimate Frisbee was, is such a small sport. Sometimes we think our sports are way bigger because we surround ourselves with it. And then you remove yourself and you realize like, oh man, we are super tiny. We got to all work together. Like that's always been my MO, is the more unity you can have between clubs and divisions and all that stuff, the better, because when you start having people do their own thing, I mean, we're just too small. We got to have, I mean, it doesn't make sense to have some players not playing in this event, or maybe some spectators or fans not showing up to this event because of some sort of situation like that. So, all right, we're going to move on to now the Skellefteå Open. Skellefteå. That sounds way better than whatever I just said. Paul McBeth takes it down, wins by two shots over Lori Lettinen, who really kind of gave it away towards the beginning of the front nine and then kind of made it a little bit closer towards the backstretch. You had a charging James Proctor also, who might have still been a little bit sleepy coming off the plane in round one. He started eight shots back of Paul after round one and was able to get within three going in, finishing the final round. And then finishing out your top five, you got Scott Stokely taking a top five as well. So great finish there from Scott. And on the FPO side, you have Sylvia Saarinen, I believe. Now, she was someone that let me double check. I believe I saw her earlier season at the Blue Ridge Championships. Yes, she was there. She has one of the best putts, I think, in FPO. Now, eye test. I don't know statistically. I don't know. And I don't know under pressure if it's good or not. But I was up there practicing putting after one of my practice rounds, or after one of the rounds actually in the tournament. And she was also up there, which we all know, like, there's a lot of people that just like don't put in that much work into their game. And so her being up there, I was also like, oh man, okay, she's putting in the work. But watching her putt too, I was like, dang, she's got like a really freaking solid putt. She now has, let me pull up the Stat Mando here. There's another little Stat Mando stat. She now has won three PDGA Euro Tour wins in a row. This is the first woman to win three in a row since Krista Tatar did it back in 2019. So I don't know much about her game. I didn't watch any, I'm going to be honest, I didn't watch any FPO side on this tournament. I was watching as much FPO as I could at Kansas City Wide Open. But this is someone that we might want to keep our eye on maybe some of the shorter courses. This was a very short course. I'll be the first to say, watching it on the MPO side, it was not a long course. They had a lot of just kind of throw this tiny little forehand or backhand up there, but she will be playing at the European Open, which is a very long course. So this could be completely, a point that doesn't make any sense, but just a name to maybe keep an eye out on going into the European Open. Do you have anything to add to that? There wasn't much there.
I've never seen her play, but I saw the same thing from Statmando that she's killing it right now.
Yeah, there's not.
I'm surprised she's not here, honestly. Norway.
Yeah, she's not at this event. She's playing another event this week, I believe. So maybe there's some local event that she likes playing more than that, but. The only other thing I wanted to bring up from this tournament was Jakob's putting. I don't know if you saw the clip that was going around. We'll have Silas run it here. It's kind of a long clip, so I'll kind of just talk through it. So it's just not any, there's no audio in it. But we're on a very short island hole. I believe this is hole 16. It's a very short, like 220-foot island hole. And it can't be more than like 20 feet to the right and 20 feet to the left. It's a very small island. And he proceeds to have a birdie putt 20 feet from the basket, airballs it to the right, walks, goes, picks it up, airballs it again to the right, walks, picks it up, airballs it again to the right. And at this time, these are all 20 footers. These are not, you know, it's not like he's airballing it and now he's got a 40 footer or something like that. He has the same exact putt back to back to back to back. And my question to you, Yuli, is, you know, he ends up five putting. My question to you is, did he do the right thing? Do you just continue to try to make it? Or is there a number of putts that you're like, all right, I don't know what's going on. I need to lay up and just get out of this hole. What's the mentality there?
I would have, if I was his coach, I would have told him when that starts happening, just walk away, gather your thoughts,
take a full reset.
100% use more than 30 seconds at this point. Like, wait till they call you on that or something. Like, just have a complete reset, because that's one of those things where the anxiety gets there and then you step up and you've done a big, you know, big boo-boo, and then you do it again after the second one. That's when you take a second and you're like, okay, because people three putt all the time. That's not a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
But four and five putting is. And after that, you at least have to gather your thoughts and calm the nerves down, because when you're missing putts like that, it's not form related. He's a good putter. We've seen him make a lot of putts under pressure too. I've seen him make a lot of putts. And so that's like that's a mental lapse. And the only thing you can do is take your time and reset.
Yeah. I think that's a great thing for the listeners is, When you start having those putting struggles, we tend to try to speed up and we're just trying to like get off the hole because we're embarrassed or the, you know, like you said, the anxiety, all those things are building up. And so you're trying to just get faster and faster, which ultimately leads to more mistakes. And we don't really have, in disc golf, we don't really have like reading the greens. We don't really have a reason or excuse to take longer time. There's not something that we can do to where we can like, you know, walk it off or whatever. So I think you might be right. Like, you miss a putt, instead of maybe immediately going and putting again, maybe walk to your bag, put some chalk on your hands, or I don't know, Mark, I think you're right in the sense of like, do something different, take some time to break it up. Versus he just got in this endless loop of doing the same exact thing five times in a row.
Yeah. And as a coach, I like feel like what I try to tell people is definitely take your time, but it's mental. It has nothing to do with your physical putt. It is the mental between the brain telling your hand what to do. That's what's messed up. It has nothing to do with a form flaw or this. Now, some putts, because of form, are easier to repeat, of course. But if you've made a 20 footer before with whatever stroke you have the ability to do it. And the one thing that's causing you not to do that is you're not functioning from your brain reading all the way to your hand, and taking your time is going to be your best solution.
Yeah. Very wise and smart words. All right. Let's go to this Greg Barsby tweet. Not sure if you saw this. Greg Barsby's getting back on Twitter. Great follow. I talked to him a little bit today about this tweet and about him getting on Twitter and being a little bit more active there. So if you're not following Greg Barsby on Twitter, definitely check it out. But he tweets out, Ford founded in Detroit offered a $100,000 sponsorship to the Disc Golf World Championships in Kalamazoo back in 2008. For those that don't know, Kalamazoo is also kind of somewhat close to the Detroit area.
Yeah.
The PDGA turned it down, is what he tweeted. Now, this tweet got shared kind of like wildfire, and I talked to him a little bit today about it, that we need, you know, some of these stories and moving forward, we need more of this stuff coming out to light. Like, a lot of stuff I think is like behind the curtain, or a very small group of people know about it and no one else. This is something that I have never heard of. And I don't know, Yuli, did you hear about this in 2008 at all?
I do. I remember this actually happening, and then the story kind of breaking. Sport was pretty small back then, so it wasn't like it didn't get around a bunch. But I remember everybody wondering why it happened. I don't think we got answers. I've also heard of other big time sponsorships going through the PDGA and then not doing it. And I don't know why. I think that might be a good guest to have on here to ask those questions about all kinds of PDG stuff. I think that's something that I would like to do is to have get the big guy, Joe. Let's get him on here. Might as well.
Yeah, I think
ask him about those ratings, man. Bring those. I want to grill this guy.
Yeah, and this kind of leads in perfectly to the next story, which is a little bit of a disturbing story, and it's kind of gotten even crazier since I think today or yesterday. I have a hard time knowing what's what over here in Norway, but this was a story that broke, and again, this is another one that not only the person that made this post, but also multiple other people tweeted me, sent me this. This was something that they definitely wanted people to hear about. And this was from Rose Leonard, I believe, PDGA number 197634. This was a post that Rose made. Good morning. I thought twice about doing this, but when the frustration of hearing that we are not receiving the support we are looking for made me upset, I said, I am making my opinion public. Biological males have no place in women's sports. To start, I was selected this year to be on the PDGA Women's Committee. I also did not know that there was a PDGA Women's Committee. Did you, Yuli? Oh, you didn't know. Okay. I was unaware of that. I've never even seen any voting or anything with that. I was excited to join this group of women and learn more about this sport. I am not sure that I want to be a part of it at all now. A few days ago, I watched the press conference that a lot of FPO players had at the Preserve. I saw them crying. I could feel their pain. This situation with the transgender participation in the FPO is so difficult, being the mother of two girls who have no idea what is happening around them. How can you explain to them what's going on? She continues saying, on Monday at the PDGA Women's Committee meeting, where everything I expected to see and hear didn't happen, I expected to hear support for the females, but I heard the opposite. I heard something that is particularly a threat, and I know very well what I heard from Laura. If you accept the movement, great. If not, let the blood run. Laura led a very one-sided conversation that found many supporters within the meeting. They discussed women not being women by definition of chromosomes and blamed the PDGA for the problems. At the end, they were trying to come up with a group-endorsed plan to push back on the PDGA policy. Only 9 of our 15 members were present at this time. Anyone can choose the direction they want to take with their lives. Just don't hurt others and try to impose something that even you know is not correct. Laura Nagtigal may have not thought about what they were saying, but how can you talk about acceptance and the only thing that comes out of your mouth is threats? Thank you for taking your time to read my statement. I read that and I was like, what the heck? What is going on? The PDGA responded to Rose's post. This is Mike Sullivan, the PGA Senior Policy and Compliance Officer. Mike Sullivan says, Miss Leonard, we're writing today because a portion of your Facebook social media post breaches your duties as a PDGA volunteer. Specifically, your post claims to describe discussions that took place during the meeting of the committee on Monday, July 3rd, 2023. You allege that during the discussion, you heard something that is particularly a threat from Laura, and further that the group blamed the PDGA and tried to come up with a group-endorsed plan to push back on the PDGA policy. After investigation and discussion with members of the committee, we have concluded that your statements do not reflect the actual discussion that occurred. Multiple attendees confirmed that the PDGA policy of eligibility for gender-based divisions was explicitly not discussed, that no plan to push back was discussed, and that Ms. Nattigal did not make any kind of threat. Instead, the discussion centered around whether the committee could serve in a leadership role by modeling respectful discussion and debate around hot-button issues affecting women. And Ms. Nagtigal's statement was about her personal fear that someone might get hurt if the temperature of the discussion could not be lowered in some fashion. PDGA committees can only function if the volunteer members are able to speak frankly and in confidence to one another. Your post breached that trust and misrepresented the content of the committee's discussions. Therefore, you are dismissed from the committee effective immediately. Okay. So now we have this, like, he said, she said, right? We have one side, Rose, saying this is what went down. Then we have the PDGA coming back over the top saying, no, what you said was incorrect. This is actually what happened. And so now we're kind of just like, we don't really know what's going on. Belize Disc Golf. Okay. Belize Disc Golf just withdrew from the PGA affiliate country status. And this is what they said. Belize Disc Golf started focusing on development of a competitive scene in Belize back in 2020. Since then, we have built the second largest PGA member base in Latin America and have historically run almost 40% of all events ever held in Latin America. They go on to talk about kind of all the other stuff they did. They've done. We strongly condemn the PDGA actions towards Rosemary Leonard for bringing to light the transgender agenda of the women's committee. Your removal of Belize's sole member on the women's committee due to her not wanting to stay quiet about the meeting's content and dismissing what she considered threats is unacceptable. Your meeting should be recorded and transcribed for all members to see. I agree with that. As paying members, we should be permitted to see what is being discussed and how it will affect our sport. We were invited to be an affiliate country of the PDGA around 2020. We cannot continue to be affiliated with the PDGA, and we request to formally withdraw Belize Disc Golf of affiliate status with the PDGA effective immediately. Signed, a list of PDGA members. So I think we for sure need to have potentially a PDGA, someone in the PDGA come on and kind of discuss what's going on. I think having Rose on might also be a good discussion. And it sounds like right now, and this is something that you kind of just mentioned, right? There's been a lot of things, you know, my firsthand interaction with the PDGA was not good. Right. My first interaction with the PGA was with the driving range situation at Worlds. Right. And I had people in the PGA just lying to me, acting like I don't know the facts, saying there's no chance you can rent out the driving range. We've tried. And then I just went and did it. And it's like, I think there's a lot of questions, and you have a lot of questions that people want to know from the PDGA that we're just like, what is going on here? And it might be a good thing to start these questions now before it gets a little bit too much out of hand, right?
Yeah. I mean, a lot to unpack in that.
It's nuts. Thing,
that was crazy.
What? Like it's every crazy. Week.
My first thing is if the policies say that you're not allowed to talk about what's in the meeting, that policy has to change because you should be able to talk to other members yes. about what's going on in there. First thing. Now, if the policy says you're not allowed to, she shouldn't have posted what she posted. But then for the PDGA to then come over and then post about her not being able to post is them posting about what's going on inside the meeting. Is it not?
I don't know. They are doing what they said that she shouldn't be allowed to do.
Right. So why are they not contacting her personally and being like, hey, why didn't you do this, blah, 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 and keeping it in-house instead of making this big thing on social media? That's a bogey. That's a big-time bogey.
It's a wild one, and it's one, too, where...
Am I right, though?
No, you're 100% right. The way they handled it, I do not think is the correct way of handling the situation. They should have handled this behind closed doors, gotten the two members wow. or whatever... and yes. figured it out and then came out with a statement of like, this is what we're
and
doing.
And they made a statement.
Yes. Instead of like, this seems like what you would see like on Twitter between two like fans talking about their teams.
Yes.
And like this person saying one thing about their team and this person be like, no, you're lying. It seems very unprofessional, if you will. But this is what I'll say too. One thing that really rubbed me the wrong way a lot of times coming from Ultimate and Disc Golf have a lot of similarities in a lot of ways. And one of those is the organization USA Ultimate, which is very similar to the organization, the PDGA. They're starting to get people like making tons of money like in their positions at USA Ultimate, like stupid amounts of money. And us at Ultimate Players, we always wondered, like, what are these people doing? Because we're not really seeing much changing or like stuff going well for the sport, but we're just seeing, because you can see everyone, it's because of the way the organization is, you can see how much salary, how much people make. And like these people's salaries are just like going up and up and up, and the sport's not really advancing. Nothing's really changing. And so we were just always questioning that. And I don't know if that's been brought up where people are like, hey, this person makes a crazy amount of money in the PDGA or whatnot. But there was that whole thing at Worlds too. It might've been, I think it was the one at the Fort. So the one that James Conrad won, where they made a post talking about how much like the world's purse was. And then I think there was like some pushback. I think initially they were thinking like everyone was going to freak out, kind of like, we're going to talk about that in a second, but everyone's going to freak out about how much money it was. And then there was like some pushback of like, wait, what a second. What about this, this, and this, and this? And then all of a sudden they just decided to like add more money to the purse. And everyone was like, well, where'd that money come from? Wait a second. Like, if no one said anything, was that money going to, there's been like a lot of just weird things business-wise that the PGA have done over the years. And, you know, I think as the sport continues to grow and more of these things come to light, I would love to have some conversations about what the heck is going on over there.
Uh-huh. Agreed.
So we'll see. We'll see what we can come of it in the weeks ahead.
Losing Belize, like that shouldn't happen. That's not a thing that should happen. That needs to be.
That's not a good look.
That's not something that should happen.
It's not a good look. But let's go to some positive news here. Okay. We got the Disc Golf Pro Tour, the PDGA and Smuggler's Notch Resort are proud to announce that LL Bean has become the presenting sponsor of the 2023 PDGA Professional Disc Golf World Championships with a minimum purse of $275,000 this year. We can go into their actual article or their statement, if you will. I looked in here to see if there was any information on like how much of that 275 is coming from LL Bean, or if there was any information of like how long this relationship is or anything like that. There's some quotes in here. You know, it says, while there's much to love about disc golf, ask any player and you'll likely hear that spending time outside with friends and family is core to their love of the sport. This is Chuck Gannon, the director of brand and performance at LL Bean. Our purpose at LL Bean is to inspire and enable people to experience a restorative power of being outside. So the pairing of these brands is a natural fit. It makes sense between the two brands for sure. Disc golf and LL Bean makes a lot of sense. Jeff Spring goes on to say, this is a big moment of this for the sport. LL Bean is a legendary outdoors company and a fantastic fit as a partner and supporter of disc golf. I'm proud of the work we've done at Smuggler's Notch and in the professional disc golf community to reach this moment.
Give a sec to say what LL Bean is for our listeners who might not know the brand.
Good. Okay. So LL Bean is essentially like a, they're like an outdoorsy kind of, they're known, I would say they're known most for like their backpacks. That's at least growing up as a kid, like everyone, a lot of cool kids had the LL Bean backpacks, but they're like an outdoorsy. They're like a Patagonia. Yeah. If you've heard of Patagonia or an REI, they're like an outdoorsy kind of brand that has a bunch of, apparel, you know, clothing, those type of things. So it makes a lot of sense. I guess this is the only really information that is extra on here. It says, as part of their support, LL Bean's iconic Boot Mobile will be on site for the event to join in the fun. Essentially, the Boot Mobile is just their like traveling merch thing. So it's like a store, pop-up. It's like a pop-up tour. It looks cool. It's a boot. It's like a car boot, but it's just a pop-up tour. So again, I think some people will look at this and just go like freak out, like $275,000. Oh my gosh. Again, I don't know how, I would love to have more details. Like how much money is LL Bean actually giving? What else are they doing? And then what does this relationship look like for the future? Because one thing,
and how does it compare to other sponsorship that we've gotten in the past?
Yes. Well, I have that information. All Too World did bring up, in their post that they made, they did bring up all the past years, purses. So going all the way back to 2014, which was $100,000, just over $100,000. Then we saw it go up to, in 2021, we saw it go all the way up to 173. In 2022, it was $200,000. And then this year it's $275,000 minimum. So one of the questions we had in debate night was, what's a bigger deal, LL Bean or the money that LL Bean is putting in? And my thought was like, I mean, are they, do you think the Disc Golf Pro Tour is like charging LL Bean more money than they would charge another title sponsor? I don't think so. Right.
I would just be trying to, make a relationship with that company, because it's a big, very big company. So the dollar bills, although it's really nice to see 275, but how much, like you said, how much is coming from that exact company? And I would just, if I was them, I would just be figuring out a way to get like the minimum and then prove your worth.
Yes.
And then build a relationship with them after that to be like, see, it works. Now let's keep going. And then LL Bean gets in, and then you, form a great relationship. But I don't know the details.
We need to start trying to lock, and maybe we can't, maybe it's not big enough yet, but I would love to see more like my guess is it's a 1 year deal. Or they would have announced multiple. Like, there was nothing in the article stating how long of a deal it was. So I feel like it's a 1 year deal, but I would love, I think big growth on the sponsorship side of things would be, hey, we just signed a 3 year, 5 year, 7 year deal with so-and-so to be the title sponsor of this. And I think right now, a lot of these companies are like, hey, we'll throw a little bit of money here and see what happens, see what our return on investment is, and go from there. And I think you're right. LL Bean would be an awesome one to see like a long lasting relationship with. It's a big brand, man.
I would be also pushing everybody to go follow the brand, support the brand, do all that stuff so that they do see like a growth in revenue from them doing that thing. And what it also does is then it creates competition with other brands similar, like Patagonia or whatever, to, you know, if it's a healthy relationship and lucrative for especially LL Bean, then you could be able to go after other sponsors for other tournaments and such.
Yeah, love it. Last storyline here, Kristen Tatar ratings update. For those that care about ratings, this is the only rating that I care about. It's, can Kristen Tatar get to 1,000? It's the only one I care about because it is a cool story. She went up 2 rating points this last update. She is now at 994. Bad news is like the European Open, they play, I believe, the same layout as us. So they are in our pool, I believe, for ratings. And normally that doesn't bode well for their ratings. But we'll see. Like, Evelina shot like a 10-20 rated round, I believe, last year. So we'll see. She's getting closer and closer though. 994. We just want to keep seeing those green numbers go up and up and up. And man, if she gets there, I think that would be a massive story. As much as I hate ratings, I will tip my cap at Kristen Tatar hitting 1,000. That, because that'd be a cool thing to see.
Yeah. Well, I've always said this. I feel like ratings are silly, of course, but the one mark that I do like is the 1,000 mark, because I feel like that gives you the legitimacy as a professional. Mm. Like, I feel like they could use a rating system even for like someday the Silver Series, or not the Silver Series, someday a series that's like the, what do you call it? The Corn Ferry Tour, like in traditional golf, mm-hmm. you know? I would like to see ratings be this. Once you get 1,000, you're a professional. Like, you're a legit professional, and now you can play big time events. Obviously, then I would want to, for us to be able to get our cards. Something else has to happen. Like, once you're professional, then you have to go play qualifiers and get your status, and then keep your status with whatever. But I feel like that could be a good mark for amateurs to try to get to that 1,000 rated mark. It used to be different. Like, I think they call a professional 975 rated right now. And that's just not a real mark for what we have on the pro tour, I don't think.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing I don't like about the one suggestion I would say is like 1,000 rated doesn't equal 1,000 rated, where we don't really have that figured out yet. Golf has it figured out. Like, I've never played golf with a scratch golfer and then been like, oh, well, like, I'm just on a course that doesn't suit my game. Like, a scratch golfer on any course is going to be a scratch golfer. There are 1,000 rated players out there that are 1,000 rated on pitch and putt courses. And you put them on a non-pitch and putt course and you're like, you're not good at disc golf. And vice versa. There's people that are 1,000 rated because they can throw really far. And then you put them in like a technical course and you're like, you're not good at disc golf. We don't have that figured out yet. And so that's where I think it would be tough to kind of be like all thousands, but neither here nor there. We've already talked about ratings far too long on this podcast. So we need to continue moving forward. Last thing I got, Yuli, we got a quick one tonight. Last thing I got is picks from last week. Steez Nerd hit us up, said, hey, this is a close race. This is coming down to the wire. Yuli picks a winner. He's back in the winner's circle. Picks a winner.
My first one.
Gets 5 points for picking Gannon Burr, and then gets super close with his Cole Rodolin and Chris Clemens picks, 13th and 11th, right there, knocking on the door. I had the curse. I picked someone that didn't play. I hate that. Presnell decided that he wasn't going to play that tournament on Thursday, I guess, because he was on there still on Wednesday. Or they just
back
didn't.
Problem.
Oh, so he did get
back
injured.
Problem.
Okay, I'm not
back
mad at
problem.
Him. I'm not mad at him. Presnell, I take it back. Not mad at you. And then Yuli, you were looking really good there for a moment. I was thinking that you were going to get a sneaky top 10.
And I should have. You know, I started my round off the final round. I lost my cool after hole one. I got to admit it. I threw a shot.
I lost my cool after hole one.
I did. I'm not lying. I threw a shot on one that I thought was perfect. It ended up coming up maybe 6 inches short.
Oh!
I threw my next shot. Looked really nice. Get down there and rolled to like 50 feet. I threw my next shot into a tree right in front of me because I had no putt. Had to make a 30 footer for double bogey. And I was just livid. Like, I lost. It was my fault. Bad mental game that week. I thought I was getting better at the mental game, and then I just went back into some bad habits. Dude, it did. I lost it. I birdie hole two, and then I just couldn't get back on track. I was so mad that I was taking a double bogey when I felt like I deserved a birdie. But I'm gonna learn from it. So that's my apology to you.
Last week
I should have had the top 10.
Last week when I was practice putting, I was like in my head thinking like, I'm never going to be bad at putting again. Cause I was putting so well the last couple weeks. I'm like, I'm never going to be bad at putting. Like, I've got it figured out. Like, I'm good. Like, how do people have these? My putts never felt worse. My putt feels so bad this week. It is atrocious. And I'm just like, how do I go from feeling so confident with my putting to then where I'm at this week going into this tournament where I'm just like, it doesn't even feel like it's coming out of my hand properly. So All right, we'll get Yuli back in here. Hopefully, if you're listening to this, you will not hear any of the technical difficulties that we had. Hopefully, Silas is an absolute monster on his end and kind of cleans this up. We will move forward and end this before anything else crazy happens. So, Yuli, I get first pick because you got more points last. Oh, no. Crap. I always forget. Do we do who got more points last week or who's losing the overall? I think we do who losing overall. So you still get first pick.
Okay.
And this is the first tournament. I'm not letting you change the rules. This is the first tournament that the last 2 weeks we can't pick. So there are 12 people off the board. 12 people cannot be picked for this week.
I'm going first chance I get. I'm taking Paul Macbeth. He's been over here for so long.
He has been over here for a while. Yeah. Okay. Taking Paul Macbeth. All right. I get two picks now. Paul was a good pick because he like wasn't pickable for a while.
Yeah.
This is going to be one where we're kind of dropping down the leaderboard here a little bit because there's so many, we've picked so many people. All right, I'm going to go Niklas Attila.
Nice.
And I'm going to go, I think James Proctor is going to have a good week too. Did we pick him? No, he's off the, yeah, we're good. James Proctor. I think this course suits his game pretty well.
I like those. I'm going to go with is Conrad on the board?
Conrad is good to be picked. Not on the board.
It's a lot of straight shots, man.
There's a lot of straight shots. You're taking James Conrad?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then your and final pick?
I'm going to go with... I don't know. I feel like I got to pick... This guy is just... I shouldn't pick this, but I'm gonna. Can I? It's such a wild card. I just don't even want to say it.
Whatever your heart desires, man.
Well, it's between Greg Barsby and somebody else.
Ooh, I mean, he is past champ.
The past champ.
He is past champ, brother.
All right, I'm going to pick Chandler Kramer.
So you went Chandler Kramer. I went with Bradley Williams to round out mine. And those are our picks this week. Make sure you guys tune into the PCS Open Thursday morning, bright and early. Watch your disc golf before your day gets started, I guess, or watch your disc golf while you're at work. And it goes Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and then we head off to the European Open next week. That will be a big one. We'll try to probably grab a couple people for that one, Yuli, to interview kind of leading up to the major. And then also we might actually have, you know, maybe someone from the PGA, or maybe we kind of wait until the European. I kind of want to do that. I think next week we need to focus on the major, put all the there, and then maybe the week after the major, maybe we get someone from the PGGA or we get Rose or someone like that on, and we can kind of iron out some of these things that we brought to light on today's episode. But that's going to do it. You got anything else for us, Yuli?
That's all I got.
All right. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. We appreciate it. Make sure you are subscribed to the YouTube channel and you drop a like on the YouTube video and you listen to us on all the podcasts and leave a review. 5-star review. 5 stars, baby. Thanks so much. We'll see you next week.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.